heroes dressed in grey. No plans for final day. Stay in bed, drift away. It could have been all songs in the street. It was nearly complete, it was nearly so sweet. And now I'm singing three lines on a shirt. Jewels remain still gleaming. No more years of hurt. No more need for dreaming.
Talk about football coming home. And then one night in Rome, we were strong, we had grown. And now I see it's ready for war. Guys are good as before, Shearer certain to score. And Psycho screaming,
three lines on his shirt. Jewels remain still gleaming. No more years of hurt.
7 o'clock, it's Thursday night. It can only mean one thing. We're here again for the next 2.5 hours for the Rhyme and Roundup show. And I hope everybody out there is keeping nice and warm on this lovely, frosty, wet evening. But we're going to start, as we always start the show, we're going to start with all the results from the games played in the last week. And we're just waiting for the computer to load up. And here we go. So we'll start then, as normal. We'll start off with Saturday. And the computer's on a go slow. Not going to do it tonight, but we're going to get there eventually. But there we go. It's going to spin its way down. Humblest apologies to everybody that's out there, but here we go then. So then, 17th then, it was Billericay Town 2, Leatherhead 0 in the Rhyme and Prem. Bury Town 0, Kingstonian 3. East Thurrock United 1, Leiston 0. Grays Athletic 1, Lewis 3. Hampton and Richmond Borough 2, Harrow Borough 1. Maidstone United 2, AFC Hornchurch 0 in front of 2,086 at Maidstone to see that game against Hornchurch. Margate 1, Dulwich Hamlet 2. Metropolitan Police 2, Peacehaven and Tilscombe 0. Tonbridge Angels 2, Enfield Town 1. And we've got, just bear with me a second, I think we've gone too far. Do you know what? I think we've skipped and gone way, way, way too far. But we're just going to have a quick look back. We have gone too far. Apologies for everybody out there. It's the computer playing up again. So we start off again. Start afresh. Why not? 24th of January. Just start with these ones then. Grays Athletic 2, Harrow Borough 1. Hampton Richmond Borough 1, Dulwich Hamlet 0. Hendon 3, Kingstonian 1. Maidstone United 0, Enfield Town 3. And that's why I knew he was reading the wrong ones, because Enfield Town won the game. It's 2,202 at that Maidstone game. The game between Margate and AFC Hornchurch, the game was postponed. Metropolitan Police 3, Leiston 1. Tonbridge Angels 0, Leatherhead 3, VCD Athletic 2, Canvey Island 2, and Wingate and Finchley 2, Lewis 0. In the Rhyme and North, it was AFC Sudbury 6, Great Wakering Rovers 1, Brighton Sea Regent 2, Dereham Town 0, Burnham Ramblers 3, Cheshunt 3, Cray Wanderers 2, Brentwood Town 3, Needham Market 4, Barkingside 1, Somerton Rangers 2, Averley 1. Thurrock 2, Harlow Town 1. And while we're on that game, let's wish everybody here wishes Sam Holloway all the very, very best there with his double break to his leg that happened during the game there against Thurrock on Saturday. Tilbury 1, Chatham Town 0. Ware 3, Thamesmead Town 2. Wroxham 4, Maldon Triptree 1. In the South Division, it was Burgess Hill Town 1, Sitting Bull 0. Still unbeaten, Burgess Hill Town. Carshalton Athletic 3, East Grinstead Town 1. Chipstead 1, Walton and Hersham 1. Faversham Town 1, Winstable Town 3. Guernsey 3, Tooting and Mitcham United 2. Herne Bay 1, Worthing 0. Ramsgate 3, Three Bridges 3. Redhill 2, Hive Town 2. Walton Casuals 0, Horsham 2. Whiteleaf 1, Mersham 5. We then move forward then to the Sunday game, which was in the Disability Cup, and the game between Folkestone Invicta and St Albans City was postponed. On Monday night in the Roman Prem, it was Kingstone in 3, Lewis 0. In the Kent County Cup, it was Gillingham 2, Tonbridge Angels 0. And then on Tuesday night in the Roman Prem, it was Bury Town 1, Maidstone United 2, Enfield Town 0, Dulwich Hamlet 1, Metropolitan Police 1, Canvey Island 1. In the Rama North, it was Burnham Ramblers 1, Great Wakering Rovers 6, Dereham Town 3, Needham Market 1, Redbridge 2, Barkingside 4, Thurrock 4, Chatham Town 2. In the Rama South, it's Faversham Town 2, Chipstead 1, South Park 2, Horsham 3, Walton Hersham 1, Herne Bay 1. In the Robert Dice League Cup Round 3, it was Chesant 0, Grays Athletic 2, Witham Town 1, AFC Sudbury 1, and AFC Sudbury won that on 4-3 on penalties. In the Cambridge County Cup, it was Somerton Rangers 3, Oversports 1. In the Essex County Cup, it was Billericay Town 1, Brighton & Sea Regent 1. Billericay Town won 3-2 on penalties. In the Kent County Cup, it was Margate 2, Folkestone Invicta 1, Thamesmead Town 2, Ramsgate 3. In the London County Cup, Cockfosters 2, Tooting & Mitcham United 2, Tooting winning by 5 penalties to 4. In the Middlesex Cup, it was North Greenford United 0, Harrowborough 4. Wroxham 4, Scull United 1 in the Norfolk County Cup. In the Surrey County Cup, it was Redhill 0, Westfield 2. And then on Wednesday night, in the Women's Cup, it was Charlton Athletic 6, Carshalton 1. And in the Vets Cup, the game between Burgess Hill Town and Herne Bay was postponed. And in the Sussex County Cup, at quarterfinals, it was Worthing 0, Burgess Hill Town 3. There was a game tonight, but it's been called off. It's some side called Tottenham Hotspurs. I don't know who they are. Tottenham Hotspur ladies versus Gillingham, but the game has been called off. So we go to the tables. And in the Rama Prem, it is still Maidstone United top of the shot. Played 29 and 65 points. Dulwich Hamlet of 31 from 61. Margate have got 29 and play 29 with 59. Metropolitan plays 29 with 54. Hendon 28 with 54. East Thurrock United 30 with 51. And at the bottom of the table, it's Bury Town bottom, play 32 with 21 points. Harrow Borough 31 with 25 points. AFC Hornchurch have played 29 with 25 points. VCD Athletic have played 30 with 27. And Witham have played 26 with 27. In the Rama North, it's top of the shot is Harlow Town, played 32 with 73 points. Then Needham Market have played 30 with 70. Wroxham have played 31 with 58. Brentwood Town have played 28 with 57. AFC Sudbury have played 30 with 54. And Thurrock have played 30 with 53. At the bottom of the table, it's Burnham Ramblers have played 32 with 14 points. Cray Wanderers have played 28 with 17. Barkingside have played 27 with 25. Chatham 32 with 29. And Romford have played 29 with 30. And in the Ryman South, top of the shot, Burgess Hill Town played 27, won 22, drawn 5, lost none. With a goal difference 68-4, 22 against, plus 46, 71 points out of 70, 71 points and unbeaten so far. Faversham Town are next. They've played 5 games more on 32 and shot 71 points. Mersham have played 31 on 63. Folkestone Invicta have played 30 with 61. At the bottom of the table, it's now Ramsgate at the bottom, played 30 with 26 points. Redhill played 27 with 26 points. Horsham, with win after win in the last few weeks, now on third from bottom, played 30 with 29. Walton Casuals have played 31 with 31. And Hive Town have played 30 with 31 as well. In our goal scorers, we have got in the realm of premits. David Knight has got 21 for Wingate and Finchley. Sam Higgins, 18 for East Thurrock. Leon Smith, Ryan Moss have got 17 apiece from Hendon and Margate. Frederick Lapio has got 14 for Grays. On 13, we've got Franny Collin, Kieran Hughes-Mason and Oliver Pearce from Bognor, Leatherhead and Maidstone. On 12, we've got Charlie Moon, Charlie Allen, Gareth Heath for Hampton, Richmond Borough, Margate and Leiston. On 11, we've got Alex Filcher from Maidstone United. And on 10, Billy Metlock from Tonbridge Angels, Bradley Hudson-Odu from Metropolitan Police and Craig Parker for Leiston. In the Ryman North, it's Alex Reid, 28 for Harlow Town, Christy Finch, 25 for Wroxham, Kieran Bishop, 18 for Ware. On 17, we've got Remy Gordon and Sam Newson from Wroxham and Needham Market. On 15, we've got Jason Hallett. On 14, we've got Luke Stanley and Ross Wall from Soham and Thurrock. On 13, we've got Adam Bowley, Jay Nash, Neil Richmond, Ryan Hawkins and Tyrus Gordon-Young for Cheshunt, Great Wakering Rovers, Tilbury, Dereham and Thamesmead. And on 12, we've got Charlie Stimpson and Luke Ingram for Thurrock and Needham Market. In the Ryman South, top of the shot is Chris Smith, who 24 for South Park. Ian Draycott, 20 for Folkestone and Victor. Ian Pullman and Stuart King, 19 apiece for Winstable Town and Herne Bay. Daniel Sumners has got 17 for Tooting and Mitcham United. Mark McGrath, 17 from Guernsey. Roscoe DeSand, 16 for Whiteleaf. On 15, we've got Jack Harris, Tommy Hutchins and Wayne Wilson from Faversham, Mersham and Faversham. On 14, we've got Daniel Moody from Chipstead, Patrick Harding from Burgess Hill Town, Paul Booth from Folkestone and Victor. And then on 13, we have got Frankie Sawyer and Anthony, because I'm not even going to attempt to say the young man's last name because it's impossible, from Horsham and Tooting and Mitcham United. Games coming up then this weekend. We have got on Saturday, it is in the Roman Prem, AFC Hornchurch versus VCD Athletic, Bognor Regis Town versus Billericay Town, Canvey Island versus Tonbridge Angels, Dulwich Hamlet versus Grays Athletic, Enfield Town versus Metropolitan Police, Harrow Borough versus Wingate and Finchley, Kingstonian versus Maidstone United, Leatherhead versus Bury Town, Leiston versus Hampton and Richmond Borough, Lewis versus East Thurrock, Peacehaven and Telscombe versus Hendon, and Whittam Town versus Margate. In the Ryman North, it's Averley versus Cray Wanderers, Barkingside versus Thurrock, Brentwood Town versus AFC Sudbury, Chatham Town versus Burnham Ramblers, Cheshunt versus Brightlingsea, Dereham versus Tilbury, Great Wakering Rovers versus Ware, Harlow Town versus Heybridge Swifts, Malden Triptree versus Needham Market, Romford versus Soham Town Rangers, Thamesmead Town versus Wroxham, Waltham Abbey versus Redbridge. In the Ryman South, it's Three Bridges versus Guernsey. That's a 12:45 kickoff, the game between Three Bridges and Guernsey. Corinthian Casuals back from Brazil against Carshorton Athletic. East Grinstead Town versus Whiteleaf. Horsham versus Redhill. Hive Town versus Faversham. Mersham versus Hastings United. Sittingbourne versus Ramsgate. South Park versus Herne Bay. Tooting and Mitcham United versus the unbeaten Burgess Hill Town. Walton and Hersham versus Folkestone and Victor. Winstable Town versus Chipstead, Worthing versus Wharton Casuals, and in the Disability Cup, it's Bury Town versus Cheltenham Athletic Deaf. So they are the games for this week. But today I was I went to a seminar. I think it was probably my first seminar, I think, that I've been to. But to say it was probably one of the most enjoyable days that I've had in a very, very long time was probably probably a little bit of an understatement, to say the least. And I'm really happy and proud to say that that Billy's here from Kestrel. How are you, Billy?
Good evening.
And how are you?
I'm fine tonight, yeah, thank you.
I mean, how did you sit this afternoon? I know we've got a few minutes before the phone starts ringing, but we'll just go into this morning and this early part of this afternoon.
I thought it was fantastic, you know. First of all, you know, we got the numbers. It was a sellout. It was standing room only. And what really sort of seals it for me is afterwards, when the feedback that tells you whether it's a success or not, you know, what goes on in your own head is not always what happens for other people. But for me, the feedback I got from everyone else at the end, to go up and said that was worthwhile, it gave them food for thought. You know, just made it the right thing to do.
Mm. I mean, it's. I must admit, I went up there, as you know, for Tom and Spokeman, and I sort of came back from that, and wasn't expecting anything at the end, and he was probably got mobbed by about sort of seven or eight different teams. You know, is that true what you said? Was that exactly what did happen, and so forth? And how, you know, how did you go about doing this, and how did you go about doing that? And it was exactly, as I said up there, it was exactly what the club was like. And if it wasn't for your company and the likes of Tom and everybody putting the money into it, you know, Harlow Town wouldn't be here today. And it's
Well, it's great to feel part of that success story, you know, and go out there tonight like I did, and see all the kids out there playing, hear about the amount of games that you're getting, the feedback you're getting from the players, that it's a good surface. And then, you know, particularly at this time of year, that games are going on regardless of the weather, and you've got a good playing surface as well. So you're ticking a lot of boxes. And if Kestrel have contributed to that, then we're absolutely delighted.
Well, it's quite funny because it was looking at today, of course, we've got Heybridge Swifts at home at the weekend, and as we said, we've not had a game called off yet, touch wood. But it was one of those things you looked at it and thought, oh no, it's starting to snow.
For sure. Well, that's one of the things that we did address today, wasn't it? You know, everyone says you've got an all-weather pitch, and that's not necessarily the case. You know, what it doesn't do, protect you against extreme frost and snow. But, you know, in this part of the country, how much snow do we really get? Mm. You know, if it's once or twice a year, yeah, I'm sure that's something that you can live with compared to the bad old days of two games a week and slightly shower of rain and the game's off. And, you know, we're sitting at home watching Emmerdale. It's not the same.
Absolutely. But it's one of the things I forgot to say, actually, at the seminar, I must admit, because it was one of those things where when you look at the actual the Ryman League tables, Harlow are actually I'm sure I'm right in saying this, that we are the only team that is up to date, or one of the only teams up to date with matches this season. So we should have played 32 games up to this point.
Sure.
And we played 32.
Right.
So last year, I think we played the, you know, the right amount of home games.
Uh-huh.
But of course, we ended up going to teams that had got not so great pitches, shall we say, and of course getting them called off, where we were quite lucky with the fixtures this time, where those sort of teams that we were playing were early on in the season when their pitches weren't too bad, and now you're sort of going to the teams that aren't that bad when you have to go to visit them.
But it's a bit of a lottery though, Dave, because last year was a real bad winter, wasn't it? Mm. You know, and that was the real acid test for the pitch. That was its first season. But this year hasn't been quite so bad, you know, but there's still, you know, half a season to go yet. And you guys must find it a huge benefit in terms of not just in the revenue streams that you're getting, but for the players to be continually playing. You know, every footballer wants to be playing every week. You know, where I come from, I live over in Hampton, and they've had game after game postponed, and as for the reserves, they just get set to the side. And you know, a friend's son, he hasn't played in 7 weeks, and they get despondent and find it hard to get the enthusiasm up to go and play football.
I mean, I know we went there, I think it was in one of the cup competitions, I think it might have been the League Cup, that we went there, and it was a wet day, and we went over there, and it was like watching the players playing in a paddy field. Every time they sort of kicked it, that there was sort of mud up all over their boots. It was just like the old fashioned days when you're thinking,
definitely. And do you know that, you know, if we can talk about Hampton, and hopefully not in a bad light, but it's a stadium where we've carried out a lot of work on in the past, you know, put drainage system in, levelled the pitch, talked them through the maintenance, and like everything else, the loose touch and don't follow through what you've been asking them to do maintenance-wise. And within 6 months, a year, the pitch starts performing just because they're doing the wrong things as far as maintenance is concerned. And it's so, so crucial in natural grass pitches and artificial pitches. You still want to maintain them well. But even if you're not 100% maintaining the artificial pitch, you're still going to play, you know, and that's the whole key thing is, you know, good surfaces and being able to play through the winter and no breaks.
Well, we did have one, I think it was one game last year where it was absolutely tipping down for about 2 or 3 days, and then we got to the sort of game and it was like typhoons almost. It was the wind was blowing, the rain was coming down, it was always coming down horizontally, it was just so bad. And I know some of the other games, like the Chessing game just up the road, and a couple of the other games were getting abandoned, and and of course all of a sudden, I think it was halfway through either the first or second half, and it was like hailstones coming down the size of golf balls. It was just horrendous. And in the end, they took the players off, the referee took the players off the pitch. It was that bad, and it was actually hitting the players, so they couldn't see, and the referee couldn't see going. They were just hammering down. And they walked off into the actual into the dressing room. We got Stuart on the phone, but we'll leave Stuart there just for a second, Stuart. And basically they went off and went off the pitch, came back on. Uh-huh. And when they came back on, they just got to the edge of the pitch and the rain had stopped and the pitch was perfect. It was not a single puddle on it, no nothing. And a bolt of lightning hit from the roundabout end all the way across into the golf course, the other end.
Right.
And you've never seen these dive to the floor. And of course, all had to come off again for another 10 minutes before, just to make sure everything was nice and safe. It came back on the pitch, finished the game, and there was not a splash, no nothing on the pitch whatsoever. It was just amazing. But we've got Stuart on the phone. Of course, we're going to find out who is our team of the week. Hello, Stuart. Hello, Stuart. You still there? Nope, Stuart's gone. So we'll hopefully Stuart will call back in a minute. We didn't quite hear what I said to him, so hopefully Stuart will call back with us in a minute. But it was just quite incredible that you actually got that sort of stuff where it just sort of this bolt of lightning just flew across the pitch. But hopefully that's Stuart again. Hello, Stuart. Hello. Hello, Stuart. No, he's not going to. He's not there. So I don't know what the issue is, but we'll try and see if we can't get Stuart on the line as soon as we possibly can. It seems to be a slight little issue. I'm not too sure what the issue is, but we'll try and get him back on the line as soon as we possibly can. But it's flashing away, but we just don't seem to be able to connect with Stuart in a minute. But hopefully that will come off in a minute, and hopefully we will get Stuart as soon as we possibly can. But we'll carry on. He'll come back in a minute, hopefully. Fingers crossed, anyway. But yeah, it was just we've never had anything where there's been you looked at the pitch and thought, oh, I think it was other than that. I think he was explaining in the seminar where there was like a puddle on the pitch at one stage. I think it was on a Monday night, and I got this picture for, oh, I'll have a look, and I think, what? And then of course you got there, and as you said, it just completely drained away just because of the storm drains. Just couldn't take the sheer volume of water. Yeah.
But do you find that having a 3G pitch actually changes the style of football that they play? You know, because as we know, you mentioned that the 1970s type pitch with a diamond of wear pattern through the middle, you that dictated the way you played the game. Yeah, yeah. Whereas do you find that with a 3G pitch, the passing and moving and is a lot better.
Third time lucky. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
We've got you now. I saw what it was eventually after you rang off the second time. I realised what happened, so I do apologise, sir. One of the buttons wasn't pressed down, but we're with you now. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm good, thanks. How's things?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Not too bad. We're just at a 3G seminar this afternoon, and it went really, really well. Any 3G pitches up north near you?
Yeah, they're becoming a bit more popular. One of my local Step 6 sides plays on one. There's two in the same league, and there's another one in the a Step 4 side. So yeah, there's quite a few.
Yeah, we had a fantastic day and learning more about 3G. And as you know, we've got it down here, but it's we've got Billy in the studio from Kestrel, and it was just a fantastic day learning more about it. And I think it's for me, it's a complete no-brainer. I think it's just if you can get the finance, you need to put one in.
Yeah, a lot of them. I think a lot more. It's going to be used a lot more in the future. There's a few definitely thinking about it, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, team of the week. I think I know one because it was almost a walkover this week, wasn't it? It weren't close this week.
No, it was a bit of a landslide, and
deservedly so as well.
Yeah,
I think.
When I put it on the Facebook group, the Ryman League Facebook group, the first three comments were Enfield Town, Enfield Town, Enfield Town. So I think it was pretty unanimously decided that Enfield Town were this week's Ryman team of the week. But from fifth upwards, it was Whitstable, Horsham, Hampton, Brightlingsea Region and Enfield, which was more than 60% of the vote, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see it before it came out. I thought, let's have a quick look just to see if it's a situation where it might be close or whatever. And I looked at it and thought, nah, they've absolutely walked it this week. And but then again, I mean, rightly so. When you play someone like Maidstone and you go into Maidstone and, you know, one of the sort of... and Oliver was here today and at the 3G seminar. And when you go to, it's like going into Manchester City or Chelsea and coming away with a victory. You can only be like them that's going to win it.
Yeah, it was a big result. I think many of them would have predicted it down in the Ryman League there, but it was a great result for the team and a fully deserved team of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's got to be
one team up for Team of the Week next week already, and we'll find out in my next phone conversation. But Dereham Town could well be on the list because, of course, they managed to do us a favour here by beating Needham Market on Tuesday night.
Yeah, they did. I was watching you retweet the results.
quite happily, yeah.
Quite happy to retweet that and let everybody know. So, yeah, I've seen that one.
It was one of those things where I just couldn't believe it. I didn't believe it myself, and it was... It was just mental, you know. It was one of those results that I wasn't expecting, and it turned up that that was what it was, and it was I was quite pleased this end, I must admit. It was very very much a happy Tuesday night, and especially after Saturday.
Yeah, after that, I was looking at the Ryman League tables on the website. I think it was yesterday. Oh, yeah, it was yesterday, Wednesday. And he's making for interesting reading there. It looks like both ends of the table that things are looking good.
Yeah, I mean,
it's certainly all exciting for some of the fans anyway, I'd have thought.
I mean, the Ryman Prem itself, the Ryman Prem sort of looked like it was a two-horse race for quite some time. And now all of a sudden it's sort of turned into a four-horse race, and you can normally tell when you go onto a betting site or something just to have a look just to see who's favourites and who's not. And It's according to the one that I've had a look at, it's a four horse race in the Prem, a two horse race in the north, and then in the south it's supposed to be a four horse race. But how the betting site in the south can make it a four horse race, I do not know, because when you've got a team there that's played 27 games, they've won 22 of them and drawn 5, with a plus 46 goal difference and 71 points, and to be on the same points as a team in second but have 5 games in hand, I don't understand how you can still. You can still have it as a four horse race.
Yeah, we've got a couple like that in our Northern Division, and certainly the Premier Division as well. There's teams that have had good cup runs and have got 4 or 5 games in hand, and they're only 5 or 6 points behind. So with 2 wins and that's it, they're right back in it with another 3 games in hand. So, and the form that they're on as well, you'd expect more from them.
I mean, I'm looking at Saturday's fixtures, and of course, one of them that could end up being a good nomination next week could be the likes of something like a Whittam, because they're at home to Margate, Kingstone at home to Maidstone United. So there's a few around, or even a Grays going to Dulwich. So there's a few interesting ones around, even a Peacehaven and Telscombe beating Hendon as well. So there's a few hanging around there that could be it. But it would be nice to see on a bias front it to be either a Dereham or a Maldon Triptree come next Thursday.
Yeah, I love this time of the year. You just get Christmas out of the way. The weather's always a bit rubbish, so you're always going to get a few postponements, and it just makes for a neutral, it makes for an interesting running for the season, because teams are playing catch up, teams are playing games in midweek, the league's starting to take shape, everyone's vying for promotion, playoffs and relegation. So this for me now is the exciting part of the season, where it all starts to take shape, and you can get 2 or 3 games in a week as well to go and watch and stuff like that. So I'm really going to look forward to the running for the rest of the season now myself.
It's going to be an interesting race. I think it's none of the leagues are over just yet, and we normally get somebody that comes out of the pack probably in all the leagues.
It's going to make it all exciting.
Well, it's going to have to be some run from somebody in the South Division, but the North and the Prem, who's to say that come the end of it, it's... And I'll say it because he's just come into the studio. Who's to say it ain't going to be Averley winning the title, or it could even be somebody like a Hendon winning the Prem title. You just never know how it's going to pan out in the end. So it's going to be an exciting last few months of the season, to say the least.
Yeah, I've been checking the fixtures out as well. I'm hoping to come down towards the end of the season and try and catch one of these exciting games and see if I can catch my first Ryman game. So I'm keeping an eye on the table and the fixtures so I can pick the game right.
Well, there is one right at the end of the season that could end up being a right humdinger, depending on how they play between now and then. But the last but one game of the season is the top two in the Ryman North as it stands. So that could be very interesting.
Yeah, that will be one to watch out for, I think.
Hopefully it's over one way or the other by then, but we'll see.
And it'll put you out of your misery, or you'll be celebrating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah, one way or the other. One way or the other. But Stuart, it's been fantastic talking again tonight. And as we said to everybody out there, if you want to get your Ryman Team of the Week in, or your nomination, send that to harlowtown007@gmail.com by 10 o'clock on Saturday evening, and we'll send them on to Stuart. So just make sure you get your nominations in. And we'll speak next week, mate.
Once I get the nominations, they'll be out online for lunchtime Sunday.
Yeah, magic. Thanks, Stuart, again. And thanks for your time. And we'll speak again next week, mate.
Catch up soon, David.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
There we go. That was Stuart. So this week's team of the week then, Enfield Town, for their victory over Maidstone United last Saturday. And as we just said, into the studio comes Mr. Avery himself, Mr. Craig Johnston. How are you, Craig?
Yeah, fine, thank you.
You're good. How's the traffic?
Murder. I was glad I was coming this way. I was only an hour from the M25 to here, whereas going home looks as though at the moment it'll be a lot longer than that.
Lovely.
Hopefully it'll clear by the time I'm finished.
Well, let's do some introductions in the studio. Craig, this is Billy from Kestrel.
Billy?
So,
how you doing, Craig?
Not bad, not bad.
So we were at the 3G seminar today, and Billy's been kind enough to stay on have a chat in the studio tonight. But, I mean, with your new stadium, were you looking at 3G, or is that going
to
still
be growing? To be fair, it was... a bit of wrong timing for me personally, because we had a board meeting today, so otherwise I would have been here personally myself anyway.
Okay.
But no, from our point of view, it will be 3G main stadium. And I'm told, talking to our people that are dealing with it, that when I said to the young lady, Kestrel are going to be at our Hawks radio phone in tonight, and she said, "What is it, Billy?" And I said, I don't know.
Reputation goes before me, does it?
Exactly.
Deny all knowledge.
Anna Kakoran.
Sorry?
Anna Kakoran.
Oh, yeah. I knew Anna. Yeah, yeah. She used to be, she's still over, based over west.
Yes.
With,
Southwest.
With, what's the name of the company again?
Sports Solutions.
Sports Solutions, I'll give them regards, will you?
Yeah,
so what's her link with Averley then?
Sports Solutions have been dealing with the move for Averley for quite a few seasons. So,
okay, then. You're in good hands there then, you know. And you'll be in double good hands if you come to Kestrel.
Yeah. So, by all accounts, because I said to her, who's actually dealing with the 3G side of things for us, and she said that will go out to tender, and Kestrel will be one of those.
Excellent. And there's natural gas pitches as well, is there?
Yeah, on the outside of the stadium.
We've done a lot. We've done team with them.
Yeah.
I think that was the. Have we done any more?
Cirencester or not?
No, is that been done yet?
That's indoor.
No, we didn't do that. But there's a couple of projects that we've placed for them, but certainly team was the one that we worked on. That was a good project. That had a little 3G. Yeah. They've got a little kind of 60x40.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think about that. 8 or 9 grass pitches and a stadium pitch. But I think they kind of missed an opportunity. I guess in hindsight, they would have put the 3G in there in the stadium.
That was about 2-3 years ago that was finished.
Yeah, it might even be 4 years ago. Time flies, but about that.
Yeah.
So I mean, we were there today, and there was so many people. I mean, must have been what 60, 70 people there today.
There was. I think there was from taking away the people from the industry. I think there was about 70 there.
Yeah.
You know, so it was standing room only because it's 80 that holds in there, wasn't it? And by the time we put the commercial, the sponsors in, there was over 80 of us. So it felt warm, didn't it? You know, it felt it was an atmosphere. You know,
Ryman Club's well represented.
Yeah, there was quite a few in down. Potts Bar Town were there as well. So we'll go into that a bit more in a minute. But we've got Nick on the phone. If you want to whack your headphones on, Billy, this is the man we've got to. Everybody, this end is going to say a massive thank you to pass on to Matt. So how are we, Nick?
You're a happy boy, aren't you? That's the only reason you wanted me on this week.
Well, you know, what can we say? You know, they did us a favour.
They did themselves a favour, really, after, you know, I went down to Brightlingsea on Saturday when they played there, and Brightlingsea deserved the win on the day. A couple of late goals, but they did deserve the victory. And, you know, to bounce back in that style, I wasn't there because I was, Wroxham were involved in a County Cup game, so I missed it, but I was following it on Twitter, and it was a great result, great performance, apparently. So, you know, full credit to them, and I'm sure Matt Hemman's a happy boy, I would imagine.
Well, I know Ray Dyer said to me, he said he was watching it through he literally got hold of his phone, he got it the flap over the screen, and he's only got it done for the Ryman North, and he kept hearing this beep, and he kept looking, and it was Barking side scoring, or it was this one scoring, and then he said he got right to the end, and it was 1-1, and he heard it beep again, and had another look, and he saw Dearham, and he's thinking, oh no, you know, this is it, you know, because we know it's not very often that Needham lose, and he sort of looked at it and sort of see it 2-1, and he said, and almost by the time he's put his phone back down again, it was 3-1. He said he was pleasantly pleased, shall we say?
Yeah, they left it late. I think it was it the 79th minute when they went 2-1 up. I mean, they led for a lot of the game. They scored early, then obviously Needham came back. You know, and just the reaction from the players on social media afterwards, you know, they were obviously buzzing and really happy. And, you know, that sort of restored a little bit of faith, I guess, you know, after Saturday's game, because they were really low after that, as you can imagine. But to, you know, to come back in that fashion and win against a side who they regard as probably, well, they are one of the two best teams in the league, you know. So it just shows that they have the ability and capability to mix it with the best in the league.
I mean, again, it's going to be interesting because, of course, as we said before, I think a couple of weeks ago, they are the team that could really put the spanner in the works, or one of the ones that, because they've got to play Needham twice or once now, and they've still got Harlow to play as well. So they could be the spoilers.
Oh, they've got every chance to do that, and they feel that they've got, you know, a side good enough to beat any team in the division. You know, even speaking to the skipper after that game at Brightlingsea, you know, he said we're all a little bit deflated at the moment, but we know that we've got the, you know, they've got the faith with each other within the squad. You know, that they can go and do it. So that they were determined to make a mark, if you like, on Tuesday and bounce back in that way. So I think that just proves that they have got the ability to stay with it. And that although they are still just outside the playoff zone, you know, they're ready to strike to a degree.
Well, they've still got those two games in hand. Of course, it does still mean that if they win those two games in hand, they go above Wroxham. So the fight is still on.
Yeah, it is. You know, from a Norfolk point of view, obviously there's a duel going on there to see who's going to be up there at the end of the season. From, you know, obviously we hope they both will, but yeah, I mean, if Dearham were to win both the games in hand, then they would go a point above Wroxham. From their point of view, I mean, they had a cup game which they should have won, and they did quite comfortably on Tuesday, but quite significantly really in the last week, 2 weeks, Stu Lart has sort of moved to add a number of new faces to the squad, you know, which have, you know, I think I've said to you before, I feel that their issue is that it's not a very deep squad. You know, if they were to pick up injuries or suspensions, or equally have a little bit of a slump in form, which they have done, because I felt that one or two players would probably get a bit fatigued, so their performance levels were dropping, if you like. But the introduction of one or two new faces has now put a little bit more competition in the squad, for one, which is good for any team. But equally, it's allowing Stu Larter to give one or two players a bit of a rest, you know, so that they can get their energy levels back up to where they were before they just suffered that little bit of a low point, if you like, in the league. So it seems, though, that the mojo sort of returned a little bit to some of the players.
Wroxham have got a... You know, just looking at the Wroxham game and stuff. Now, of course, they've got a tough game this week because they go to Thamesmead, and of course that's Keith McMahon's last game in charge. So that'll be a toughie for them.
Yeah, well, it's probably not the best time to go there. But as I say, you know, I think they've just found that, you know, a little bit more momentum now, and hopefully, and they know that they're in a great position as well. So they're going to obviously want to go and show what they can do and keep the pressure on, because obviously it's, you know, it's a big gap between Needham in second and themselves, and they've just got to make sure that they stay in that playoff zone, and that they've got themselves into a good position, and hopefully they can keep there.
Well, talking to Keith, of course he was in the studio last week, and this week he says he's resigned from Thamesmead, but the big news that no one knows except for me and him, he's actually going to be coming in next week, and until And I know it won't be very long because he's, as we said last week, probably one of the hardest working managers out there. He will get another job very soon, but he's going to be co-hosting the show with me from next week. So Keith will be in the studio with us next week.
Is there a reason behind the... I mean, I haven't seen the details behind him stepping down, is it? Has he just served his term, if you like, served his time?
I think so, and I think he just wants to spend more time with the family as well. I think that's was the reason it was put out, yeah, that he wants to spend a bit more time with his family.
Yeah, it's a long time, isn't it, to be you know, associated with a club at that level and that standing. So yeah, there comes a time when you have to maybe make a big decision, isn't it?
It definitely is. Yeah, Dereham. I mean, I'm just looking at their games. I mean, I know we've only got 29 days, whatever it may be, in February. But their February is absolutely jam-packed with fixtures.
Well, January was going to be a bad month for them anyway. I think they had one postponed in that time, so it wasn't quite so bad. But I think they had...
Seven games they've got in February this time, man.
Right, yeah. So they've maybe there's been one. I mean, I don't know if that... Does that include the Cup? Is there a Cup semi-final in that as well? Or is that... Maybe
no, they're all league games. No, they're all league games. So they start, off with Waltham Abbey away. Well, that'll be off, so you ain't got to worry about that. Chesson away. Brentwood Town away. yeah. Ware at home. Great Wakering away. Barkingside at home. And Thamesmead at home. So there's a good old run of fixtures in there.
Yeah, and a fair amount of travelling, isn't it? I think the County Cup semi-final is the beginning of March. So, But... you know, I mean, we've been quite fortunate up here with weather and the pitches. You know, they've been reasonable. Obviously, we've had quite a bit of rain in the last few weeks, but it stayed off enough so we haven't had that many cancellations. I think midweek this week has been a bit of an issue for one or two clubs, but overall, it's not too bad. And significantly, when I went to Wroxham on Tuesday, I mean, theirs has taken a bit of battering over the last few weeks, and it's... Obviously, when it rains so much, it's difficult for the groundsmen to get on the pitch, isn't it? You know, and do something. But it looks as though they'd actually got some machinery on and had a little bit of a light roll on it, you know. And it looked really good actually on Tuesday. So you know, they've been able to do a little bit of work on it. But you know, obviously with the snow now coming and freezing conditions, that's going to cause a few other issues, I'm sure, around the county and beyond.
So Radio Norfolk are not going to shell out a bit of money so that Kestrel can come down there and put down a couple of 3G pitches down for Dereham and Wroxham then?
Well, it's a massive talking point. You know, I mean, when I was at Wroxham on Tuesday, you know, a lot of people were talking about 3G pitches, and I was talking to the district manager, and I think he said, I can't remember which club he said now, but somebody's got the go-ahead to have a 3G pitch installed. I think it was it Kirkley? Can't remember which club it was now, but you know, another club has taken the plunge to put one in. And I know that Wroxham would seriously consider it, but obviously the funding side of things is a big issue, isn't it? You know, because I know you can get grants, but you're going to have to find half of it or whatever yourself anyway. But you know, the financial payback of a 3G pitch obviously is a massive positive from that respect.
And Christy Finch back scoring again.
Yeah, he scored again during the week. You know, he's perhaps not as, you know, at the peak as he was when he was really banging them in, because he's sort of levelled off just a little bit. But you know, he's one of those players that he can look as though he's out of a game for a long, long time, and then all of a sudden, you know, you'll feed him the ball and it's in the back of the net. But the good thing from Wroxham's point of view is that they've got Remy Gordon, who's he's in the top 10 scorers in the first division as well, and they've got a lad called Jamie Forshaw who's now started to find the net in the last few games. So, you know, they're not just reliant on him. And Nathan Stone, they've got another striker who's out for quite a lengthy suspension. He should be back fairly soon as well. So, I say this competition side of it is going to be good for them, and equally, it's good that they're sharing the goals about a little bit.
We said that Dereham got seven games, but Wroxham only got five.
So Wroxham, yeah, really?
Yeah, so Wroxham have only got Cray Wanderers, Tilbury, Harlow, Chatham and Romford.
Yeah, the difference being that those games that Dereham are catching up on. So, yeah, but by the end of February, we should be all square, hopefully, barring any postponements, and we'll see where we are from then. Because obviously, when we get to the end of February, then we're getting really to the business end, aren't we? And we'll see who's going to be in the shake-up come then. But obviously, you know, Thurrock, it was a good win for them, wasn't it, during the week? And they've, you know, that they're keeping pace. And Sudbury, by the sounds of it, you know, even though the new manager's gone in, they don't seem to have suffered at all, and they've had a couple of wins since Jamie Godbolt went there as manager. So, we were talking last week, weren't we, that I'm sure that it's going to be somebody outside of that current top five who are going to force their way in. And I think you've got two or three clubs there who are more than capable of doing that.
Someone said to me the other day that they felt if someone was going to sneak in there, and it'd be interesting to see Craig's face, somebody said to me they thought if they was looking for a rank outsider to actually squeeze their way in, they would go for Tilbury. Craig's.
Well, I'll have first-hand knowledge, obviously, on Saturday, because I'll be, they're playing Durham, aren't they? So I'll go and have a look and see what I think. That's an interesting one.
Well, Craig.
That is very interesting.
Go on, Craig.
Hi, Nick. Craig.
Hiya.
Hello there. In my opinion, Tilbury, Gary Henty's taken over down here. He's done a fantastic job and turned them around, and they've got a lot of confidence at the moment. But not a chance. Keep your money in your pocket. No, they're much improved on what they were, and he's obviously building, and I'm sure he's building with a view to next year, possibly to give it a go. But that's far too quick. If I was plumping for a real outsider, I would look at Brightlingsea. If you look at their record over the last probably 20 league games, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I can see why. You know, having seen them on Saturday, you know, they got some strong players in there. They got, you know, obviously strengths that they play to. They got the fullback who bungs in a long throw, and that's how they got one of their goals. You know, but they forced Deeren back an awful lot, and the work rate was impressive. Pitch was very, very tacky.
Yeah.
It's quite a big pitch down there, isn't it? As well as Brighton. So I was quite surprised when I got there how big it was. But I wouldn't disagree, because they've got quite a capable unit there, I think.
I think they've probably got a little bit too much to do as well, because you are, you know, obviously if you're looking at a top five, in my opinion, the top two are home and hoe, so to speak, as far as top five is concerned.
Yeah.
And then I think Brentwood might find it a bit tough, because they haven't played a lot of football recently, so that can go one or two ways there. But I think with their games in hand and they haven't been affected, no one's really put any pressure on them, I think they might, you know, they've only got to hit the form that they have been sort of up to this stage, and they'll be safe. So therefore you're really only looking at two sides there. And Sudbury are obviously coming with a fairly quiet run. Just ease their way up into it. So, if you had to pick five, Nick, who would you go for?
Top five, as you say. Well, the top two, I think, are done. But cool. I mean, I've seen Brentwood. I was impressed with Brentwood when I saw them not too long ago. Crikey! Well, I'm obviously going to say Deeren. I'm going to say Deeren, Wroxham, Brentwood, and Thurrock. But it's going to be close.
Can't have six. That's six.
I was hoping you wouldn't fight. I wouldn't work that one out.
So you're going for Harlow, Needham, Wroxham, Brentwood, Thurrock and Deeren. What one's missing out?
Thurrock.
I'll be happy with that, provided Needham win it and Deeren or Wroxham go up as well. that'll suit us Essex clubs down to the ground. Especially with what looks like, as it stands at the moment, Bury Town coming possibly back to us from the Prem, and I'm told from up your neck of the woods, Norwich United look comfortable in Thurlow Nunn as well.
Well, they certainly look comfortable at the top of the division. I mean, I haven't heard whether they've definitely going to go up. I mean, they've certainly said that they would initially, but you know, we'll have to wait and see on that one. I mean, from our point of view, hopefully that will be the case, and you know, we'll have three sides up there. But you know, I haven't heard the final say on that one, if you like. I mean, it's a shame to see Bury where they are, because you know, they're side, haven't they, been mixing it with the best for quite some time, but obviously they've fallen on hard times on the pitch and off it as well, haven't they? They've had this wrangle over the ground for quite some time down there.
It's definitely going to be close. I mean, you talked about Brentwood Town there, and Brentwood Town, if they win their games in hand, only go 4 points behind Harlow. So it's not as is there going to be a tight one if they can win those games in hand? But I still think it's going to be the likes of Wroxham and Dereham that might have to say in it, because they've both got to play Harlow and they've both got to play Needham. And I know that I think the Wroxham Dereham against Needham matches are back to back on a Saturday and then a Tuesday.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this, when you look at the fixtures, there's obviously key ones that you look at, isn't there? And you think they're going to be tough or whatever. But it depends what sort of form you're in leading up to those games as well, doesn't it? You know, if you've got one or two decent results behind you to go into a match like that, then you're in really good form, particularly if you've still got a chance of the playoffs and you want to obviously, you know, keep yourself in there. So, I think it's really tough call to say who's going to be. You know, you have a plumpet who's going to be in the top five, and from my point of view, I hope the two Norfolk sides will be. But obviously then there's just, because my maths wasn't great at the time, there's obviously just one other to go in there. So, you know, no disrespect to Thurrock or anybody like that, you know, but I haven't actually seen them yet until maybe later in the season. Well, I'll get a chance to see them.
I think my concern would be and I suppose with your league hat on, Craig, is the pressure that if, and I know when we had James on, the manager down at Brightlingsea, when he came on a few weeks ago, in, you know, we're talking about their upgrades to the ground and so forth that they've got to get to standard Ryman North, and he was laughing and joking, saying Terry was saying to him, keep away from the playoffs, because if, you know, if they end up going up through the playoffs, that's quite a lot of pressure that they've got to find money wise and everything else to have the standard to stay into the in the Ryman Prem.
Yeah, to be fair to them, they've had a fantastic probably 5 years. I would have said they've come from quite down in the pyramid, sort of about three or four promotions in about 5 years, from what I can make out. So, yeah, again, whilst James probably wouldn't want me to say it, it's probably for the best that they don't go, because it probably would be a step one step too far too soon for them, I would have thought, because it is a big, big step from Ryman 1 North to the Premier. And they've had a fantastic last 4 months that has pushed them higher up the table and put them sort of slightly in contention, just under the radar. And in all fairness, for the best for the club, they probably need another season in there. But you can't tell managers that.
It was a pretty similar scenario with Lowestoft when they first got themselves into the Ryman League. But it was a bit different with them because their facilities were virtually there or thereabouts. But I mean, you're talking about a similar rise to Regent. You know, they went up from the Thurlow Nunn Premier and they went straight up from Ryman Division 1 North into the Premier, you know. So I think if you're going to do it, then you've got to do it quickly. Otherwise, you can sort of get a bit stagnant, if you like. But equally, you're not going to turn your nose up at promotion, are you?
Oh, I mean, no.
It's one of those awkward ones. But, yeah, I mean, I saw, you know, the amount of work, you know, I was talking to their officials on Saturday, the amount of work that they have got to do is quite frightening, really, because it's, you know, that's, I say, it's a big place and it does need updating, you know, things like fencing. I mean, even that costs an awful lot. It was very similar scenario to the amount of work that Wroxham had to do when they got up there, you know, and I know, you know, exactly how much that cost them. So I can, you know, sympathise with what they've got to do there.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much work they've got to do, but to attain the grade to keep them at the level they are, they'll have to do that by the 31st of March as well. So,
yeah, I knew there's this deadline. That
yeah,
and so that's a pressure in itself, isn't it? Knowing that you've got to get stuff done by then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at the teams that are at the... If we said that this is the end of the season now, Craig, and we've got the four at the bottom, what leagues would they actually go into? South or North? So we've got VCD, AFC Hornchurch, Harrowborough and Bury.
Well, looking at it, if there was four relegated, because obviously with Hereford and Salisbury now no longer in the system, there'll be a couple of reprieves, no doubt, down at that level. So there could be three relegated at that stage. It obviously comes down to the 21st position being on a points per game basis. But looking at those clubs, you're looking VCD, the current four, VCD, Hornchurch, Berrier, Cast Iron would go Ryman North. And if you look above the line, even there, you're looking at Witham, Canvey, or in those sort of teams that are in trouble. There's quite a high proportion of northern-based sides in that, which would be good news for teams like Chatham and the teams from Kent in Division 1 North, because a knock-on effect would be is that hopefully they would go back across to the south. The one that sort of sticks out a little bit there is Harrow, that where they fit is anybody's guess, really. I think they could go probably Division 1 North, but then they're out of sync with most clubs that are in Division 1 North. They could go Division 1 South, but they're probably out of line there. So technically, and this is only my feeling of it, they probably sit, from a Division 1 point of view, in the Southern League. Now, whether or not that would happen because they are ex-Ishmian club for years and years and years, I'm not sure that comes into it anymore with the way that the FA work it, because it's geographic. So, yeah, it could well be. And I was speaking to Peter Rogers before I left for the Averley game on Saturday, because they were at Millfield playing Greys, and yeah, he's concerned, obviously, that they're in that predicament. They've made a change, haven't they, this week with the new guy going in, Steve Baker. And hopefully they're not put in that position, I think, and they can retain their Ryman Premier status. But, you know, it's going to be very difficult looking down that bottom there. A brave man will pick four to go down. Probably Bury. Everybody would sort of plump for Bury. Especially on the back of their defeat from in midweek to Maidstone, where they were one up with hardly any time left by the look of it, and sort of snatched a defeat from the jaws of victory, which probably almost pushes them down, not mathematically by a long way, but realistically. But then after that, anybody that wants to put a run together, you know, any sides from probably, I don't know, looking at the table, Peacehaven, Leatherhead down are still in trouble, I would have thought. They've only got to lose sort of seven or eight games on a trot, have a bad run, and could be well in trouble.
It's amazing to see the likes of AFC Hornchurch in there when you consider that they were in the playoff final last year.
That was exactly what I was going to say, because, you know, I saw them in the playoff final, obviously, against Lowestoft, you know, and to see how they've fallen from grace, if you like. I know that virtually immediately, I mean, Lowestoft snapped up one of their players who's since gone. But I guess whether the money dried up, I don't know, whether they've had enough of putting the money in to try and do it. But it seems to be quite an amazing decline, really, doesn't it, from their point of view, from challenging to get into Conference North to all of a sudden fighting for your survival, fighting for your life in the Ryman Premier.
I suppose the question would be as well, who disappears at the out of the North at the other end? Burnham Ramblers, definitely, would you say?
Well, the two at the bottom look fairly, way out of it, really, don't they, to a degree. But again, how many of these teams all of a sudden are going to say, right, let's have a real good shift of it, and let's get some new players in, let's bung a bit more money in and try and get ourselves out of trouble, or are you just going to resign yourself to going down? I mean, you'd hope that they'd try and fight their way out of it.
I know Cray are a fair way behind. I would never write them off, though, to be fair. They've just had a managerial change. Tommy Warrilow, very experienced Ryman manager, gone in there. A lot of experience, Conference South with Tunbridge Angels. And I think...
Yeah, and they're at Wroxham next week, so I'll get to see them. So.
Yeah, we've got them on Saturday as well, so that'd be interesting. So that'll be 3 points for them, because we can't beat anybody at the bottom. So that could well kickstart their survival bid. But Justin will be listening to this after training, so he keeps moaning at me because I keep saying to him that we're inconsistent. But there you go.
So what do you
think?
You
get the others. I mean, you get somebody like Chatham. They've played more games than anybody else, haven't they? You know, so
yeah.
I mean, there's sort of issues at both ends of the table in most divisions that are still sort of to be really nailed down.
I think the funniest one, and it's not even in sort of the division that we're all involved in, but I had a conversation with a manager probably about 6-7 weeks ago. At the time, the team was sitting down, I think it was about 19th, I think they were sitting, and I said to him, well, you're not that far away from the playoffs. I said, if you get a good run and you get your players back, you could run for the playoffs. And he gave it a Dave, type of attitude. But now they're up to ninth, and they're now only actually, I think they're 9 points behind the playoffs now. And with the likes of Ross Allen back and everything else, it's not quite dead for Guernsey just yet.
Yeah, I just noticed that they popped up to ninth all of a sudden, which seems to have happened very quickly because they were sort of like mid-bottom half, weren't they, for quite some time? But yeah, they're making a bit of a run for it.
I say because you can look at we're talking about the playoffs and stuff in the other divisions, but you'd almost say the likes of Burgess Hill, Faversham, Mersham, and Folkestone and Victor are probably already there. And there's only one place up for grabs, which then you're looking at it's Worthing, Winstable, Whiteleaf, Herne Bay, Guernsey is sort of 9 points. And then even Three Bridges are only 10 points behind. So that's going to be probably tighter than the North Division because there's only one up for grabs.
Yeah, and the bottom places in the South as well. There's just not too many points separating quite a number of sides down there. So, yeah, all interesting stuff, isn't it?
Well, at least while they're at the bottom three, Tony Gale's going to carry on buying the Rahman League paper anyway. Nick, it's been fantastic talking to you again, and hopefully we'll speak to you again next week. Say Keith will be in the studio, hopefully be in the studio with us again next week as well, and hopefully another good week for both Wroxham and Dereham.
Okay, my pleasure. Cheers, guys.
No worries, mate. Speak to you later. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. And, always full of the joys of spring, young Nick, and... we'll be back and we'll be talking everything that is 3G, more around Averley. We'll leave you with these few messages and we'll be back in about 5 minutes' time. And this is the Rama Roundup Show. And we're back and we're discussing Averley's new stadium while I was off air. So shall we talk about it while we're on air? why not? But I mean, was I right in saying that he was hoping to move into a new stadium being built and done for next season? And now he's been put back...
Well, it's planning was agreed last March. There were still one or two bits of paperwork to deal with. There was a few complications. They're still rumbling on, but we're very close. So I'm told, fingers crossed. And the plan is to start work building in the end of March. To be honest, my glass is always half empty, so... I'll wait for the first spade to go in the ground before I start getting excited about it.
So, I mean, pitches-wise, I know you said you was going to have a few pitches.
Yeah, main pitch 3G. Outside main pitch, grass, floodlit, and a 9-a-side and a 7-a-side.
So with stands and stuff, is that just going to be like ours, one either side, or is it going to be behind the goals as well? Or?
We've got plans for... stands on all four sides, albeit the far side there'll be arena stands, which is what we've got behind Averley now. The arena stand over the far side, I can't remember the exact dimensions, but they're probably quite similar behind the goal and the far side, so nothing sort of elaborate, we've got to be realistic in this day and age. From memory, about 20 yards long, 25 yards long behind both goals and over the far side. Just to give that extra bit of cover if someone wants to stand behind the goal or over the far side or sit in the main stand.
And I suppose it's one of those things, I suppose what would be great for Averley, I suppose, will be to get up either this year or next year and start in the Prem in there.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? But... Harlow have struggled to do that, and there's no guarantee on anything, is there, these days? It does frustrate me because that's the attitude of quite a few people that you talk to, especially even around my club. It's sort of like, wouldn't it be lovely if we could get in the Premier, even before we get there? Like, some people need a reality check. It's crazy. When you look at Division 1 North and some of the clubs that are in Division 1 North, just look at their attendances, their advertising, their sponsorship income, etc. You know, nobody's got a divine right to play at the next level at all. And just by having a new stadium and a 3G pitch and stuff like that, yeah, get real and talk to people that have done it and still don't. Because at the end of the day, we could still be sitting here next year talking as Harlow are fifth in the league in Division 1 North quite easily at this stage. So, you know.
And it's the same sort of thing, I suppose, with the likes of Maidstone as well, isn't it? I mean, they still haven't, you know, they've had a good cup run and so forth like that and made a few bob through that. But again, they've got the 3G pitch. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be going up into the, you know, into the next division up. I mean, it looks as if, you know, the way things are at the minute, they could well do that this time round. But I think we were sitting here this time last year thinking exactly the same again last year.
Yeah, it basically gives you sustainability, doesn't it, as far as the club is concerned, and the future of the club's fairly safe if it's managed correctly. And obviously Maidstone are proving that, and they'll always, even if they miss it this year, you're guaranteed they're going to be knocking on the door next year. And with that, the crowds, especially at Maidstone, they want to see a winning team, so they'll be there as well. It'd be interesting to see if they do make the grade and they make the next step, and they, for instance, struggle a little bit, but become a mid-table side, and I'm not saying they will for one minute, as to how the crowds react down there. You know, Wealdstone have made the step from Ryman Prem, and everybody thought that they would be comfortable in the Conference South, and they struggled to come to terms with it to begin with, but their crowds have kicked on, if anything, and now they're finding their feet a little bit, and I think they're creeping up the table now. But no, there's no guarantee on anything, is there?
Well, that's the great thing about football, though, isn't it? You would like to think that just because you've got all the right proper facilities and you've got a revenue stream, that you're entitled to go up into the next division. You know, same at the top of the Premier League. Yeah. You know, we all got a wee bit blasted off about your Chelsea's and your Man City's buying their way in there. You know, but it's nice to see, like, see your Southamptons. You know, who were Division 3 not so long ago, and they're now up there among it all. So money doesn't.
It helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it gives you that sustainability, as you say. It gives you a base. Yeah. And you were saying this afternoon, Dave, you know, that the club was close to the ball before the 3G, wasn't it? You know, so if you manage it right, then you're always in a good place. Whether you get to the next level, it's down to good management, I guess.
Yeah. Because, you know, just as we said this afternoon, just because it was close to the wall and now it's doing really well, you know, a decision or decisions in quick succession that are made wrong could end up putting you back exactly where you were, you know. So as you say, there's no divine right for any club to get up there, but I would say
Alex Reid gets injured and you're like nobody, are you?
Next goal for Asia. I suppose for any club that's in the Ryman North and South looking to go up, would you say that they would probably be looking and thinking, well, I really do hope that Maidstone go up and Margate go up, because then you got rid of those.
No, I believe any club that goes up realistically will be looking and saying, how can I come fifth from bottom? And if they're not, they've got rude awakening coming, in my opinion, because it is a big jump.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had a team, if you say for instance, hypothetically, you went into that league next year, say Burgess Hill Town, who are romping away with the league, and then they get a bit of money behind and they get some decent players in and all the rest of it, you would expect some of those sort of teams that would come up to look at it and go, well, if we've got Margate are gone and Maidstone are gone and they're both in the Conference, then, you know, there's a chance of playoffs or whatever else, because you've got rid of two of the real big boys, sort of like a Chelsea or a Manchester City out the way.
Sure.
You're coming in underneath. It sort of gives you a bit more of a chance to...
You're one of these unrealistic people at a club that expects success, doesn't it? By the sound of it.
No, not at
all.
Would you rather play them then? Would you rather have them stay?
No, not necessarily play them, but if you're saying take them out of the equation because it gives your club a better opportunity of getting in the playoffs, which is what I thought. The Ryman Premier from a Division 1 step is huge. It's huge.
Well, not saying it isn't, but what I'm trying to say is if they're out of the way, if you've got two sort of like what you would class as super teams out of the way, it's going to make it easy, even if that means instead of you finishing third from bottom, you finish fifth from bottom. Do you know what I mean? You've got two big boys out of, physically out of your way.
But two big boys are dropping out of the Conference South.
But what you say, Craig, should, you know, as a club's meant to just sit in that middle band and not try and go above himself, just walk within what you can afford.
I think people need
I guess supporters are just naturally ambitious. You follow your team.
Supporters want to win, don't they, all the time, obviously. And the gap is very, very big for those that have done it. And, you know, when you look at Witham, they had a start when they went up that was beyond their dreams, I'm sure. You know, talking to Gary and Brad in the past, I think they was surprised with the amount of points that they accumulated to begin with, and they had a fantastic run, and they're in trouble. And yet, when you look at their results, they haven't really done anything wrong. Still performed better than most would think, and it's still not good enough for them, when you saw the results that were coming in at the start of the season, you'd expect them to be mid-table with those sort of results. But they're just, I know they've got games in hand, but it's a tough, tough league.
I mean, I suppose for the likes of Witham, though, it's got to be getting the likes of Luke Callender in. It's got to be a bit of a boost for them as well to get somebody in that's a proven goal scorer at that level to get them in that, to get that in the team. He's like gold dust, isn't it?
Yeah, he's done well there to get them.
Happy days. So, Avery itself then, I mean, where is with Justin and at the helm and everything, going the right way you want it to go yourself, or are you expect to be higher than where you are?
We're probably where we expected to be, in and around sort of mid-table, just pushing. A run that we had at the start of the season when we broke club record of 11 straight wins, if we have another one of them, then we're firmly in the playoffs. On the flip side, I think after we won 11 on a trot, we lost something like 10 out of the next 14. So that type of run puts us down in the bottom eight. So, you know, and we've got a team that's on its day, capable of beating anybody, having beaten Needham at home, having torn Sudbury apart at Sudbury and at home, 3-0 on both occasions, having beaten Dereham at home. Probably should have had something from the Harlow game at home. I don't know if you was there, I can't remember. Should have probably got something from that. To the tune of losing a 3-1 lead against nine men with 9 minutes to go at Cray and holding on for a 3-3 draw. Losing 2-1 at Redbridge in the most one-sided game I've ever seen in my life, when we should and could have won it by a country mile. Losing 2-0 home to Tilbury, having beaten twice away. But I'm not allowed to say we're inconsistent. I said to Justin, prove me wrong. That's we're capable.
We're winning 11 games in the World Club record, and then what, did you say 10 out of 14?
Yeah.
What do you think? Could you put your finger on what happened there? Was it injuries? Was it a lack of confidence? Was
it's funny you should say that, because we had a great win against our local rivals, Barrack, in the FA Cup on the Sunday, which was our 11th win. We then played a midweek game, a League Cup game, where Justin had already said to me that he was intending to mix it up a little bit, and we got beat in that. And then we played a step five, we're having a bit of a refurniture. And we played a step five side in the third qualifying round, I believe it was, of the FA Cup. Down in Exeter, and on paper we should have won the game, and on the day we didn't really turn up. We're fairly beaten, fair and square, 3-1, and if you saw the players' response really to that defeat, where it was as though they'd been shot, and I think it was just literally coming off the back of 11 wins when they walked off of the pitch at in those games towards 9, 10 and 11, and they were 8 foot tall, and they wasn't going to lose a game. Nobody was going to beat them, to losing a couple of games that on paper probably we shouldn't have done. They were like devastated there on the floor, and I think that affected them and took a little while to get that out of the system as such. And and we picked up, when you get injuries when you're winning, they don't matter. players come in and everybody's on a high and it rolls. The problem is when you get injuries and you get a suspension and stuff like that, when you're losing, then it has the opposite effect. And I think that's what it is. But this year I'm amazed, really. We've turned in some fantastic displays against some of the better sides and done really well.
Sure.
And nobody's guaranteed of 3 points when they play against us. But we've also been poor as well. Poor. But Justin, quite rightly, all the time there's the opportunity there. We'll strive to try and get in that top five. He believes that we can do it. We're in the County Cup semi-final, just been drawn yesterday. We've got Billericay at home, which would be fantastic if we could reach a County Cup final.
I saw Justin's response to someone's tweet though, during the week, and they were talking about it being a Billericay versus Concord final, and Justin said, they've got to beat us first.
yeah. Let them believe that. So, it'd be nice to get to a County Cup final. We've got a reasonable record. We've been in three in the last probably 10 or 12 years, so which is not bad. But we've still got a lot to play for in the last sort of 3 months of the season. So,
can I ask you, Craig, selfishly going back to the 3G, it's the only chance I'll get. I won't be back again, so it's right on the top of the agenda. Who decided at the club that 3G was the way to go forward? Was that a collective decision?
Yeah, we basically were always looking to have a 3G second training pitch,
right?
Additional pitch. And we've been looking to move, the club's been looking to move for many years, and it's been very, very slow process. And we changed our plans probably 2 years ago now with the success of Maidstone. And when I say the success of Maidstone, I don't mean the fact that they move back into the town and they get 1,500 supporters through the gate, that type of success, but the type of success that the surface has brought to Maidstone and the revenue streams that have come in from it, etc. And we just felt that coupled with the fact that, you know, the pitch at Aveley where we are, like a lot of the pitches this season, are struggling, like they were last season, like they will ongoing as well, because that's the climate, the British climate that we're in at the moment. So we decided for sustainability, for first team, etc., because it... Like Harlow will probably benefit from that, because they're guaranteed that every other Saturday they're at home, and come what may, they will be playing at home.
Sure, sure.
Unless it snows. But with grass pitches, you haven't got that guarantee either. And we're in a ground share at the moment, and our tenants, Greys, through no fault of their own, were successful in the FA Cup, FA Trophy, and every round that they won, they managed to, the next round of it was on a home game,
okay,
on a Saturday. So they lose out on the revenue on the Saturday game, which in turn affects us as well from a revenue point of view. And then all of a sudden, come January, they're stockpiling midweek home games in the league.
Sure.
And at one stage there, before postponements, I believe we were looking at, in January, Greys had 7 home league games booked in, and we had 3. Now, it does take a lot working out that that's 10 games in 31 days on a grass pitch in probably the worst month of the year.
Sure.
And I said at the time, A, that's not going to happen. The pitch will never stand it. Secondly, from an income point of view, from Greys' point of view, it's the worst month of the year that supporters come out. It's too cold. It's the month after Christmas, people got paid early, they haven't got the money, so they're not going to come out. But if you've got a 3G pitch, then obviously those games don't get called off so much. And I know Greys wasn't entirely down to postponements as such, because it was the success of their cup runs that didn't help it. Mm-hmm. But It just makes cash flow and everything a little bit easier as well, because everything just ticks over as though, like, the weather doesn't matter.
Sure. And what about, I can see that from the stability of the club, cash flow. what's the view of the players at Harlow and Avon? Are they comfortable with 3G? Do they think that's the better option?
No.
it's the wrong answer.
No.
shall I rephrase that? There's only one answer, and that's the wrong one.
cut that out. Retake. Having been a player myself, manager, etc.,
sure.
Not, in my opinion, an ideal surface for somebody that's 15, 16 years old going to play on and continue to play on until they're 32, 33.
Sure.
But then when you look at the age now, and I show my age, my own age up now, that when I was playing, when I broke into Aveley first team when I was 17, 18, that was unheard of. There was, in those days, there was one sub, and you didn't get in Aveley first team or anything like that until you were 23, 24. There was no teenagers, you know. And the amount of players in those days that were 25 to 33 was huge.
Yeah, that was the bulk of the team.
Yeah, and nowadays when you look at it, if someone's over 25 playing at this level, they've done well.
Absolutely.
So it's a lot
You're the old captain.
You know, it's almost, if you're 19 and you haven't broke into a first team, you're going to struggle nowadays, you know. So it's changed completely. So I've had it said even by one of my committee men that, you know, what we're going to do, because one of our players, he really struggles because we train on a 3G pitch as well. He struggles at training on a 3G pitch. How's he going to play? I said, A, he's 32. And secondly, we ain't even built it yet, so why are we worried about that? Sure, you know,
I think it's that hangover from the '70s that we're talking about again this afternoon. Everyone's got the QPR, Oldham, Luton type, you know, and we just can't shake that off. No. AstroTurf, it's not AstroTurf. It's 3G, okay, it's still plastic. But you know, I'm from the same generation, I would guess, you know, and I'm a natural grass man. But I think the ideal situation is have a 3G pitch out there, you know, that you can train on and still get your revenue streams from, and have the natural grass pitch for the weekends and the, you know, the big games during the week. Because one thing that, just listening to you talking about your new project, is that one thing 3G can't address is that we all want to play on Saturday afternoons and we all want to play on Sunday mornings. You know, especially the kids in Sunday mornings, and that's the kind of the bit I think we've still got to be careful that we don't squeeze a lot of people out of football, because if it's only in 3G and you've got to play in the Sunday afternoon, well, that doesn't fit in with our lifestyle.
Yeah,
you know, we love our Sunday mornings at youth football. We love our Saturday afternoons at adults, and you can't get a quart into a pint pot, which is often what they're trying to do with 3G.
Just a question for you, Billy. On a lot of talk is surrounding FIFA 1 and FIFA 2 stars.
Sure.
What's the main differences between the two?
Well, it's really just about, you know, there's ball bounce. Yeah? There's a ball bounce there. I think there's 1.1 if it's FIFA 1, and it's 1.4 if it's FIFA 2. Ball roll, I think there's 12 metres and 8 metres. So it's basically the margins are, you know, narrower or wider.
And FIFA 2 is the
stadium type, you know.
And the FIFA 1 is more community based?
It's more community based, but you can still play you can still play FA games on it at non-league level. So it's quite.
And what's the recommended usage? Or not recommended usage, what do they say is the sort of maximum hour usage per year?
Well, what we are always careful to say is don't put it into years. All you know, it's your car. You know, do you want a car that's got a 10-year warranty? Well, if you're only doing 1,000 miles a year, I'll give you a 100-year warranty, you know. It's the same with artificial grass, the footfall that goes through it. If you're playing it intensively, you know, you can get a 16,000 hours warranty, which I think is what you've got out there for the Harlow pitch, you know. But is that going to be 1 year? Is it going to be 20 years? So as I say, it's that again, that bit of the carpet by the door is going to wear more than the bit in the corner. So there's got to be a sort of certain amount of realism that comes into it. But I think you should get more than 6 years on average. And I think you'll do well to get more than 10 years. Remember, this is all just a new wave of carpet. So if I couldn't stand here and say I can guarantee you...
Because I wouldn't have thought anybody's actually changed a 3G pitch, have they?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Really?
You know, again, everything else, a few things happened at the beginning that in hindsight we would do differently. You know,
so how long has the 3G rubber crumb surface been out?
Well, that's 2003. I remember going to look at my first one. That was up in Dunfermline in Scotland. You remember they put it in up there?
Yeah.
That was a UEFA pilot. They'd done a whole bunch of pictures across Europe. But it was probably even before that. Oh, I hate that when you ask these questions how long ago. It just makes you realise, you know, time's slipping away. It's certainly 15 years. So in theory, yes, there has been pictures replaced already. But I
suppose it depends on the maintenance program and stuff like that.
Hugely. Again, just like your car, just like your body, how well you look after it.
Because I know we played a friendly this time last year in January on a 3G pitch, not too far from here, really, and one that's widely used by Ryman clubs as a training facility type thing, and the surface was awful. The carpet was like... It was sort of
lying flat.
Yeah, where it gathers in and it's rolled as such, as in joined.
Oh,
the seams were a little bit suspect. Yeah, and
that's where you got a lot of sort of debate as to, you know, you put a carpet down, what sort of warranty you get? You know, 6, 7, 8 years you can get. You know, and they say, yeah, that's great. You know, and they'll say to you, a year for the seams. You can think, well, hang on, how can we get 6 years for the carpet and a year for the seams?
Yeah.
How's that you as the end user's problem, you know? And I spoke to our carpet fitters about it, and I spoke to the guys in Europe. I said, what kind of warranty do you guys give? And they said, 2 years. I said, well, that's not, so the carpet manufacturer's saying 6 years and two.
Mm.
I said, I don't see that's fair. You know, I'm thinking the football hat on. I'm in football, you know, I don't like, it doesn't sound like the right answer to me. And what they're basically saying is, well, he said, often what happens, the maintenance is wrong, because if seams are going, you know, east to west and you're maintaining it north to south, you're actually putting pressure, you're pulling on the seam all the time. So there's that. That might well be a cop-out, you know, but I still think that what we try and do is, or what the industry's trying to do is saying, we'll come in and install your artificial grass, and we'll give you a maintenance package as well, so that can underpin the warranty.
Yeah.
You know, because what can happen is that we install it and then we're away and we don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you might be in good faith doing what you think is the right things, but the wrong things. And then you come back to us in 3 years and say, oh, the seams have all fallen apart. And sort of, well, I don't know how you've maintained it. And then it becomes a bit of a bun fight. And then that's not very healthy, is it?
I forgot the gentleman's name now from the FA that was here today.
Mark Pover.
Yeah, Mark. He was saying, though, around the FIFA levels 1 and 2, what I thought I heard was the fact that if they want to go into the FA Cup matches and stuff like that, they've got to be FIFA 2.
Two-star, that's right. But and that's what they've done here. What they've done at Maidstone, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they told them the week before the game, you've got to get FIFA 2-star tested. I think they actually have it FIFA 2-star tested, but they just wanted further proof before the game so that there wasn't any issues. So...
I think the biggest thing for me around 3G pitches is when you get people and they make the statement, oh, well, you've got the advantage because you've got the 3G pitch and we haven't. And you think, so, well, not really, because when you start looking at it, and I think I was talking to somebody about it today after the seminar today, when you actually look at the situation, you look at it and go, well, hang on a minute, we're playing 24 league games and our training on a 3G surface. We've got to play 24 other league games on grass, where the teams that have got grass are playing 47 games on grass and one game on 3G. Yeah, so who's got the advantage?
Good point. Yeah, I've never thought of that before.
And also, a lot of the teams nowadays there's hardly any teams out there that don't train at some point on a 3G surface anyway. So it's not foreign to them. They're not coming up.
You just need to look at the facts. Maidstone and Harland have not moved out of the division since they had 3G. It's obviously not giving you an advantage.
No.
You know, if you were sitting three divisions above, since you get the 3G installed, you can say, "Oh, there's no."
And it's the same thing. It's the same thing when you get these people's, you know, opinions that we were talking about before the show started. Around when we first had it down, and we managed to get all the youth sides in. We got the 20 odd youth sides in, and we were sitting in this room, literally as long ago as probably June of last year, and we were sitting in here discussing when it was an office, and we were sitting in here discussing with the new youth secretary about how many games we've got, how we're going to put it together, the CRB checks and all this. And the phone rang, and it was the local youth league that we were involved. We was going to put the boys in and the boys and girls in. And we were told, no, you can't come into our league because you're not going to be putting down proper lines. You're going to be putting down cones, the flat the flat cones. And we said, well, we can't start spraying it in blues and reds and yellows because the Roma League won't have it. It's got to be with these cones. And basically, they told us that we couldn't go in the league because of that situation. And then when we actually then sort of challenged it a few times, we found a thing that was a FA directive that we found, and the FA directive said you can use these flat cones for 9-a-side, 7-a-side, you can use them for them, it's not a problem. And we found all the information out. We went to the AGM and they actually had a vote on something that was an FA directive. And basically it was like a kangaroo court when we were in there. It was voted against. The league then decided then that they weren't going to let us play in their league. We spoke at length to the new chairman, to the new secretary, who said, look, we'll see what's going on, blah, 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 blah. In the end, Mark actually got involved from the FA, because we went through the Essex FA, went through Hertfordshire FA, got no joy whatsoever from there, went to the FA, and Mark ended up actually sending in a letter to them saying, what are you doing? This is the FA directive, and you're going against what the FA directive is. Sure. And eventually, I think it took us almost up to the first game of the season, that they actually went, right, OK, fair enough, you can actually do that, as long as you can prove to us that you're actually going to be knocking the pitches out properly and all the rest of which we were. And then, I think 2 months down, well, about a month or so ago, 8 weeks ago, whatever it might be now, they actually had phoned up and requested that we could have an under-sevens festival at Arlo Town. Yeah. They had it here. It went absolutely off like a bomb.
Yeah,
the kids loved it. Sure. It was all over Twitter. It was all over everything, saying about how good it was and how brilliant it was. And then when one got called off, I think a couple of weeks later at Weir, because of the weather, on a grass pitch, they were then trying to get it back here to play again. But of course, the first team were at home and it was just physically impossible to actually do it. And it's just amazing how the attitudes change. And I think, as I said as well, where you'll get to the summer and everybody turns around and says, 3G, you know, don't want 3G, don't want 3G. It's a waste of time. You sit all over Twitter, you sit over any social media sites, and when you speak to anybody... But the minute we get to October, November, December, everybody's going, we need 3G, we need more 3G pitches.
When do we play football? The bulk of football's played through the back end of autumn, through to the beginning of spring, which is when it's cold and wet. If we're not we're not starting in March and finishing in October.
It's interesting what you said about the markings. And Whiteleaf, obviously, who have come into Division South this year, have got the new 3G surface, and they've actually got the blue lines across the pitch for their 9-a-side or 7-a-side or whatever it is. And that's something that we looked at, and we still haven't decided what way to go yet. Personally, I don't like the idea. It reminds me of a school playground with the netball court and this. And but I'm assured by people, including Mr. Robinson, that you can't see the blue lines when you're playing, for want of a better word, and if you're sort of almost ground level, the eyes naturally sort of focus on the white.
Well, see, if you put it like this is what we've done in the past. We're putting an 11-a-side pitch, marked it as an 11-a-side pitch, and to get 5-a-side or 6-a-side, whatever numbers they play it at, you're only putting 2 blue lines through to give you 4 pitches, aren't you? So you've got your touch line, your goal line, you've got your halfway line, and you put a blue line in between those at either half. So it's not that.
But the problem you've got is, of course, you've got now in this country, you've got a 7-a-side pitch, and you've got a 9-a-side pitch, and then you've got the 11-a-side pitch.
You were thinking for 7 and 9-a-side, or 4 and 5-a-side.
So you've got maybe a blue line for your 9-a-side and a red line or a yellow line for your 7-a-side, and all of a sudden it's just like crisscross everywhere. And then if you're trying to lay it out, and you're trying to do it quickly, like if you get a load of teams, say at Averley, a couple of years' time when you've got it and you've got all those youth teams playing on there and you're trying to swap it all around. What line was it, Craig? What line is 7-a-side? Yellow, red, blue.
The other thing, just to go back to what you were saying about seams, once you start putting a lot of lines in, you're putting more seams in, which actually makes the carpet weaker. So you might find, in, not that we have done, but you can see that in year 8, 9, 10, they start to get weaker first.
Right.
Because, sometimes you're only putting nibs in, just like your carpet here. If you loads of bits all over the place, you would catch it somewhere along the line at some point when you're maintaining it, and it just it ends up quite a unsatisfactory way of doing things.
But
it's something that we've looked at or still are, because we're not sure what we want.
The round flat cones are perfect. Mm. They don't, aren't they? Very rarely move.
They're more the discs.
Yeah, the discs, yeah. They very rarely move. But the lines, what we've found out is, and it's quite funny because I know the youth secretary, we've got to sort of design something, he's saying, pattern it, he said, because it'll make a fortune. Yeah. But it's like, you know, it's weird because the round ones don't move that much at all, even if you run over it or the ball runs over it, it doesn't divert the ball in any way, shape or form, but nor does the actual lines. But the lines, because the lines are like the throwing lines and the goalkeeper and everything, they move.
Sure.
And they don't seem to have the same grip on the surface as what the actual the round cones do.
Sure.
So they move about.
Yeah.
You know, quite
smooth.
They move a lot more, and you end up sort of getting lines that are like all over the place.
What you could maybe get, you know, we've introduced the free kick, the referee comes out. Maybe we can get a version of that lasts a little bit longer, that gets you through a game. Yeah. You know, when the game's finished, it just evaporates, you know, it's game over. Lines.
I mean, we use a rope, so we've got a rope to mark the pitch out, which could be an idea for everybody. You get a rope that's the length of the pitch, and you have the rope out, and you've got bits of tape on the rope. So you leave it in certain situations. You know that colour, when you get to, say, the orange, that's where the box goes.
Sure.
When you get to the green, that's where the halfway line goes. And then you've got an orange at
the other end. How do you mark a penalty area out with these discs as well?
No, we actually use the line. So everything on our pitches now, because the league we're in, they won't let us use the round discs.
Right.
They will only let us use the sort of the rectangle lines, discs that you can put on the floor. So you put them on the floor, and then there's also ones that are at right angles as well. So when you get to the corner of the box, you've got those to put down for the corner of the box and also for the corners. Yeah. So you've got like an L shape that just
goes
down.
But naturally, if a player kicks them or slides into them, they
move. Yeah,
they do. We've done Southampton's training ground, have done for the past few years, and we put a 3G pitch in for them. And this is for the academy down, and we marked that in white for the Livingston side, and then they put in yellow going across it, and it actually isn't that intrusive. You know, the brain just kicks in and knows, you know, but what they've got is that it's when you've got blues and reds and whites and they're all close, you know, that they're crisscrossing one another, that's when it gets confusing. Maybe you've just got a white and a yellow, and the yellow is 2 or 3 metres in. It kind of looks a bit, there's more clarity.
Yeah.
You know?
We've got a 3G pitch just up the road at Passmore School, and they've got all those different colour markings on. And when you go down at the ref, it's just a nightmare, because you're just trying to see where's the off line, and you're trying to work out exactly. And if they don't put the corner flags out, or put a disc, or even put one of the old fashioned disc, you know, the high rise disc on the corners, you're thinking, was that a corner? Was that a throwing? Was that whatever it was? Because you just
That's how you get back to the Averley and the Tame Football Club. You know, you've got to have both, haven't you? You know, you can't get everyone into that 3G pitch on a Saturday afternoon, a Sunday morning. You don't want to. Want kids to play in natural grass. You know, they can have the best of both worlds is training on it and playing on it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we went to Holland in May of last year. Got this very, very big international youth tournament where we're going to represent England in it, and we went over to Holland for the first time last year, and that's exactly what they've got. It was the first time I've ever been abroad. I had to go and get a passport and everything just to go.
First time you've ever been abroad?
Yeah, and we went over there. And
is that what you said there?
I did, yeah.
You've not been to Scotland?
No, never been out of the country.
Never.
Isle of Wight was the only place I went. Were
you homesick?
Yeah. And it was something I've never wanted to do. And it was the case, we got this tournament. I managed to get this tournament, and for us to represent England in this, really is a prestigious competition for the under-12s. And Tom said to me, he said, if you've organised it all, he said, you can forget it if you don't think you're going to go with them. So he said, you've got to go and sort it. So I had to go and sort out passport. And we got over there, and the actual clubhouse was amazing. I mean, it had sort of like about, I think it had 6 dressing rooms, 2 referees' dressing rooms, a washroom and first aid room. It was just state of the art, but it was just how you imagined it to be, or how I imagined Holland to be. You know, you got like the canal down the middle, massive great big windmill over the side, and as you walk down, it was like an industrial estate, but a nicer one. If you know, as you walk down the side of this canal, there was a football club, then a fence, then a football club, then a fence, then a football club, as far as you could see.
Absolutely.
But when you went into this football club that we were in, which was Grincham, and we went into there, they've actually got a 3G surface, which the only way I describe it, because I worked for Tesco's, was it was like a value surface compared to ours here.
Yeah.
So it felt like it didn't feel right, you know, when you saw it. But the ground was a really lovely ground, but literally at the back of the goal, there was a pitch going the opposite way, so it was in like an L shape. Uh-huh. And it was a grass pitch at the back.
Uh-huh.
So what they did was, on the first day, on the Friday, when we played two games, we had to play on the 3G surface.
Uh-huh.
And then on the Saturday, their first team were playing in a relegation playoff final match.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, they had to use the 3G surface. So then the boys then had to go and play on the grass, which was quite good. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was all up and down like, you know, anything else, but they got these two surfaces there. Sure. When you spoke to them, they said, look, you know, what it is, you know, they play 1 week, they will play at home, they'll play on the 3G, and then the following week, they will go and play on the grass. And he said, and then we just rotate it all the time, so they know. And then he says, when it gets to the winter and it's too much, they just play every single week on the, you know, on the 3G surface. You know, and it seemed to work really, really well for them.
That was in the summer.
That was in May of last year.
We were just discussing again today, Craig, was that moving out the winter and getting your all-round revenue from it. You know, in the summer, 3G pitches can get warm. The surface is 10 degrees warmer than the air temperature, which is quite a lot. You know, when we tested this pitch to get the FIFA grading, it was 20 degrees air temperature. It was 29 on the floor.
I've got AstroTurf in my back garden, so I know all about it.
You'll find that, don't you?
South-facing garden.
Yeah.
In the summer, go out there with no shoes on, no chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to run off of it onto the patio.
Well, I had two experiences. I went down to San Diego when 3G first was muted and felt quite Americans there, but in their first day, introduced it to the world. And went down to San Diego, hot part of the world, and it was 32 degrees air. And they arranged a game of football for us against the girls, and we were actually good, you know. After 20 minutes, off, you know, far too hot. I was getting dizzy in the head. And then we went out to Belgium with Domo, whose carpet's in here. And again, another hot day. And they had a sprinkler system, and it just cooled the whole thing down. You know, and it felt like a natural grass pitch.
Yep.
You know, and it may be something that's worth thinking. You know, you know, and the ball performance was better. You know, come off softer, but still fast.
I know Maidstone, talking to Maidstone people, have said that it certainly plays better when it's wet.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got a little bit more zip about it.
Zip on
it. I don't know if you've found definitely. The same out there at all.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's got a good little zip on it once the ball, when it does get wet. Yeah,
I remember the guy that. The general manager, the coach guy, I'm not sure his name.
Yeah, Ryan.
I came to see him one time and I said, how's it performing? I was concerned, is it draining? You know, if it's draining. And he said, you know, actually it drains too efficiently. You know, we wish it could actually slow up a little bit. It's nice with a bit of dampness on it.
Literally, like I was saying to you about that, I think it was on air or off air, we said about it earlier on when we was playing a game last season. I think quite a lot of the games were getting abandoned because we had that big like flash flood all of a sudden on a Saturday. And, you know, we were sitting in the... I was sitting up there doing the tannoy and the hailstones were coming down the size of golf balls bouncing around all over the place, so the ref took everybody off, you know, and the pitch was, you know, you could see the water coming down on the pitch thinking, oh, this is not too great or whatever else. They took them off, and then as I say, they came back on and got that bolt of lightning that went from the roundabout end into the golf course just parallel across, everybody jumping on the floor. 2 minutes later they've gone back in, come back out, say 2 minutes later there wasn't even a single puddle, or even when the ball bounced there was not a splash. No, nothing. Yeah. It was just perfect all the way, you know, literally all the way from
the rest of the game. Was that built, because the ground itself's only, what, 6-7 years old?
Yeah.
And is it the existing drainage out there that was used?
Yeah. But we improved that. But what, I don't know if you know, what we've got out there is a unique design in the UK. It's the first pitch that's been built to that type of specification, which is why, you know, we're sort of... having these seminars and telling the world about it. So we tested that pitch when it was grass for drainage rates, and it was something like 250 mil an hour, 10 inches an hour in old money, you know, which is fine for a 3G pitch. We took the grass layer off and the upper 75 mil, 3 inches, and added sand to it to get the drainage even better. It's now, it drains it a metre an hour, over a metre an hour. You just can't, like you say, you could stand there with a watering can, you know, and you just won't fill it up, you know. Arguably, it drains too well, you know. That's the better problem to have, isn't it?
We've had that situation. I think we played the Abbey and it got to the end of the game. It was just been raining constantly for about 48 hours, just constantly. And it got to the end of one of the Abbey games and you could see little bits of water on the surface in the corner, you know, and then by the time they'd come off the pitch and someone had turned the lights off,
it's gone.
It was nothing there.
I read somewhere that somebody had a problem with the 3G only recently, where the rubber crumb is something to do with oil.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you mentioned that. If anyone's listening in, yeah. What actually happens, the rubber crumb repels, holds onto it, attracts the water initially, and then the more water you put on it, the more it dilutes, and it really is only a phenomenon for the first month or so, depending on the amount of rain you get, you know, but it's something that we always tell people, look, the first month, sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't, but I think we had that problem here, Dave, didn't we? We did actually, we had that problem here, but we flag it up, say, look, you're going to have this, but the problem will go away, and that's what happens.
I think I was right in saying that one of the first games they played on it, or... It was one of the
got abandoned, didn't it?
It got
postponed.
Postponed, and it was the only game postponed, and that was the one that was on 3G.
Yeah, I remember that. August Bank Holiday Monday something, wasn't it?
Which was mad. But there we go. So, I mean, really, just tell us a little bit about Kestrel then.
You know, fantastic. Yeah. You know, if you're going to go anywhere, come to Kestrel, you know, none better. Well, what we do is, you know, everything in sport, you know, we'll build everything from cricket to golf to rugby to hockey. And most of it's through football. We like to think we're one of the top companies in the country, if not Europe. All the equipment and operatives are all our own, so it's quite bespoke equipment. We like to think we're quite innovative. Yeah, and you know, we love sport. You know, I love football. And your problems are my problems, you know. If somebody comes to me and says if the game could postponed or a kid's hurt themselves or your pitch isn't performing, you know, I know exactly where you're coming from. You can say, well, we are losing games because your pitches aren't performing, which is affecting the club. Well, I'm involved with youth football. And I can say, okay then. So, you know, we want to give, we want to move with the times and deliver. You know, we just built a training ground for Brighton & Hove Albion for £4.5 million worth, you know, and that's got to perform, you know. So we don't hide, you know. We think we can deliver as good as anyone can in the world, but you know, that's the modesty bit of me. So
is that a good enough pitch for you? Has he got the contract?
I have no clue. That's one side of it. I'm not involved in. Fortunately.
I guess, you know, if I can just finish on that note, is that, you know, this, what we're trying to improve on is that you get the design, you get the build, you get the growing, and then you hand it over, and then you're not in control of the maintenance, and that's often where it goes wrong. Not always through the end user's fault, but just, you know, and we're trying to offer a service where we're kind of saying, whether it's artificial, whether it's natural, that we can hold your hand through it. Whether we only come in 2-3 times a year just to chat to you about it and saying, well, maybe you should do some of that and not do that, or we can actually do it, so that we can flag up early enough on that you're going to have a problem, rather than halfway through the season you phoning up and giving me an earphone saying your pitch isn't performing. Well, hang on. We've done a project for Farnham Rugby Club 3 years ago, and because it's close to our offices, we took on the maintenance. They asked us to take on the maintenance. And it's great because you feel that you've got a degree of control over the quality. You know, it's still the client's decision whether he wants to play a game. We can't help it if they want to play 3 rugby games on it on a Sunday afternoon because they have to, and it tears it up. But at least we're aware of it. We can have that conversation, and the decision is yours as the sports club. So I think that's what we've got to, the kind of relationships that we've got to try and work on for everyone's benefit. Because even you heard Mark Pover saying today that in the first framework, they get fed up with it because the quality wasn't being delivered, and they completely flipped the way they handled the framework. They get the carpet manufacturers to be in control rather than the contractors. And we've got to look at that as an industry and say, well, if the people that hand out the money are not happy with the way we manage it, we've got to look at ourselves.
I think the only thing that concerned me, and it's a funny thing that concerned me today about watching the presentations, was when the guy from Domo started handing out packets.
thought, started what?
Well, he said, if anybody wants a packet, come and see me afterwards. Like, hang on a minute.
You can't be doing that. A little bag whipped about. You know? Oh, God. How did you get into the country?
If anybody wants to know what that was, it was actually packets of cork.
It was a cork or cork.
Which is quite funny because I was standing with one of your colleagues and we just sort of looked at each other and just sort of laughed as he got his little packets. He said, you can't get these little packets. It was quite funny.
I thought he came across very well, didn't he? He done this demo of, I'm sure you've noticed, the original 3G glasses that they can lie flat, mm-hmm. which means that the ball comes off the surface very quick and the wear's greater because you've got more surface area exposed.
Yeah.
And they were forever telling you that we've got memory built into the glass, you know, and the glass bounces back up. And I was never seeing it, you know, I kind of thought, that's a complete nonsense. And he had this demo that he'd done with just an A4 paper. It was so clever because he said, what they do now is that the glass is a C shape. And if you imagine that the paper's like that, it'll fall over. If you curve the paper like that, it's more chance of standing upright. But then what he done, he twisted it, didn't he?
Mm.
And this is the new design. And it just
pings it back up.
Bing, and that. And I thought, oh, how simple yet effective. Yeah. That's the first time I've seen it. I know what he was talking about, you know, from before. But I thought, I get it now. You know, there's more strength in the spine, but there's still enough to flick back up.
But do you see with the 3G pitches going forward that it'll be more cork rather than rubber eventually?
I do, to be perfectly honest. I think if I was a betting man, I would say in 10 years' time, I bet there's going to be more cork than rubber. It's a more environmentally friendly product. It's easier to get rid of. You can actually recycle it. You could, if your carpet wears out, the cork won't. You can vacuum up the cork, filter it, and put a new carpet down and use that cork again. Mm. It's far friendlier to the environment.
So could a club that's actually got the rubber down, could they actually take that up and put the cork down?
For sure. Well, you could. There would probably still be some rubber in there, but you know, you could dominate it with the cork, you know. Again, what Mark was saying, it was Steph from Domo, wasn't it? The performance of cork is better than rubber. Rubber's just got too much give on it, whereas a cork is firm but still gives you the performance. And we put one in, another UK first, we put one in West London, South West London, in our private school. And Chelsea, they've got all these academy all over the place, and their boys went down there and used it and said it was better than Chelsea's. And they've got rubber crumb. So, and I've got to be honest to say that myself, and I would say that because we put it in, but walking over it, I remember thinking, this feels more comfortable, you know. You know, walking over that rather than walking over a cushion, you know. That's how I could best describe it.
I'm quite surprised at, I suppose, in a way. The one 3G pitch that I've always looked at and see it quite often, and it just doesn't look right whenever you see it, is Liverpool and Everton Ladies. I think the witness play there. And it's black. It's almost black. It's where the Liverpool and Everton Ladies play in the Women's Super League, and also witness play
witness
there
rugby.
For rugby.
I think
as well.
It's only been open less than a year, hasn't it?
Well, they've been playing in it now that's the second season that Liverpool Ladies have played in it during the summer.
Right.
But it's warehouses, sort of, you very, very rarely see the rubber in it. This one is literally, it looks black. You can hardly see any green in it.
I think the green's an unusual green as well.
Yeah.
It's more of a petrol bluey green, I think.
Is it?
Weird looking.
Well, did you ever see that Andorra Wales game? Do you remember that was on the telly?
Yeah.
And it was just a new 3G pitch, and it was so embarrassing for people who are trying to promote 3G. Gareth Bale was playing there, and he said it was the worst. The ball was bouncing, and it was a splash of black, wasn't it? They were taking a free kick, and it was just the crumb was throwing itself in front. What often happens is, obviously, there was too much rubber crumb on it, you know. What the five-a-side leagues do is that they actually overfill it with rubber crumb because it protects the carpet.
Right.
What they're wanting is
longer
bang
life
for their bucks, aren't they? They're not bothered about FIFA 1-star, 2-star. And the people that play five-a-side aren't either, are they? They just want to turn up and have their half an hour, whatever it is. And so they can be overfilled. But that's news to me, Dave. And I'd be surprised if that is overfilled with rubber and it's meeting the FIFA 1-star or the 2-star, you know, because that's not fair. You can't play games.
Nothing to do with the fact it's a rugby surface.
Not at all. No. Not at all. Even less so, because you look at Saracens, they play on at Newcastle, they've got 3G.
Yeah, because I would have thought if you're using this for rugby, when you've got that much black rubber in, that's going to be in the eyes everywhere, isn't it?
It's in your eyes. And you imagine you're taking you're having a scrum, yeah, and you've got all these kind of pebbles on the surfaces. Yeah. You're not getting a grip, are you? Yeah. You know, you need the artificial grass.
I've noticed it a few times when you've seen like Liverpool ladies and that panic.
I've never seen that.
And it really is black. It's incredible when you actually look at it. Now, whether or not that is, I don't know, it's a blacky bluey, even not grass, but 3G surface. I don't know, but it just looks really, really weird every time you see a game on it.
In saying that, I saw Maidstone's after they had their maintenance program put on it, where it was topped up with rubber crumb, probably, I believe it was, I'm not sure if it was the back end of last year or the year before. Can't remember exactly when it was. Very soon after, and I was very surprised.
Sure.
Of that was black.
Sure.
Looking where it had literally just been topped up and laser leveled out, etc. I was like, blimey,
Well, what they advise us when we're installing these pitches for the first time is actually to put less rubber on initially, because it's not settling down. There's still a degree of static in there, which it's bouncing it back up, and you just put as much as you can get away with on, and then come back and top it up again till you get to the right levels. Definitely putting too much on. It's probably putting too much on as well, is that you're actually burying the grass. The grass is sitting up like that, and if you come and blob rubber crumb on it, it's going to push that grass down. Yeah. So you're just putting it on little and often. It allows you to achieve what you're looking for to get the performance.
It's amazing when you see it. I know I've got a few seconds left before we get to go to the news, but it's quite amazing when you see the likes of, the ladies top league, using it. It can't be long, surely, before we see it in Premier League, can it?
I hope you're very wrong. That wouldn't. What do you think? Craig, come in here and help me.
I think Premier League is a little bit different, isn't it? Maybe down in the lower regions of the Football League, maybe. The Conference have fought it for a long while, haven't they? And I think they've just...
Yeah, I'm waiting to see a tweet. I've not seen any tweet about it today at all. I'm waiting to see if someone's going to come up with a tweet in a minute. I've even gone onto their Twitter feed because they were discussing it again today. That's what Mark said, wasn't it?
But think about it. The reason that your Harlers want 3G is it makes the whole club sustainable, doesn't it?
Mm.
You haven't got the revenue streams without it. You have with it. Arsenal can't put that argument up, can they?
No.
They don't need it, do they? No, absolutely. And if I said to you earlier, what would the players want? The players want natural grass.
But then again, half of the pitches at Spurs and Arsenal are 3G anyway, aren't they? Because they've got the actual stuff sunk in.
Built into it. But that's only, do you know how much of the ground cover that is? 3% is artificial. That's just yarn punched in, but it's at 50 mil spacings. And if you walk over it as a layman, you wouldn't see it at all. Don't say fantastic system, I've got to say, as much as it sticks in my throat because it's not ours. it's the best in the world. Yeah. Funny enough, another Dutch product. Dutch seem to come up with the good ideas for some reason.
Well, we're going to go to the news and we'll be back with Chris Layton from Whyteleafe. See you after these.